From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Just over a year ago, the FBI arrested a 25-year-old woman in Augusta, Georgia. The charge? Leaking top-secret information from the National Security Agency to the press. Last month, reality winner pleaded guilty to violating the Espionage Act. She was sentenced to 63 months in prison and 3 years of supervised release. Her prosecution is the first in the Trump administration's crackdown on whistleblowers. Jeremy Redman is a reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and he's been following the case since Winner was first arrested in June of 2017. He's joining me now in the studio. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning.
And with us also is Richard Griffiths. He's president of the Georgia First Amendment Foundation. He's encountered countless whistleblowers and would-be leakers in 25 years at CNN. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. Jeremy, I'm going to start with you. Based on your reporting, give us a portrait. Who is Reality Winner?
You know, she's a former Air Force linguist, and she was working as a contractor with the federal government in Augusta and had access to this National Security Agency document when she was arrested.
What is the document? What did she leak?
Yeah, so it's several pages of a top-secret NSA document that essentially talked about Russian efforts to interfere with our election system, to hack into it using a spear phishing sort of campaign.
So she was arrested after passing along this information to The Intercept. They published an article about Russian meddling in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. So how was she discovered as the source of the leak?
Yeah, so what happened is The Intercept, in reporting their story, sought to authenticate the document that they received from Reality Winner by mail. And they showed it
to U.S. mail?
Yeah, by U.S. mail. And they showed it to give a copy to the feds, trying to confirm the authenticity of it. And once the feds had it in their hands, they were able to track it down to Reality Winner. And there were a number of ways they were able to track it. But one is the postmark, of course, on the envelope in Augusta. But also just narrowing it down to who had access to this document and then who printed it out. And she was among those who printed it out. And it turns out, after she had printed it out, she was able to get it out of the area where she was working by stuffing it down her pantyhose.
So, postmarked from her own zip code, this was not a real act of cunning, was it?
A lot of people, her critics, question, you know, how she went about this. You know, mailing it. The Intercept also bears some responsibility, and they've come out and said that they had made, you know, some mistakes in how they went about reporting this story. You know, her defenders say, look, you know, she was trying to serve the public interest and show what the Russians were doing, which, by the way, at that time, the president was denying it all along, that the president had argued that this was a hoax, that the Russians were not meddling in the election system. But all the national intelligence community had agreed by consensus that it was a case that the Russians were involved.
Yeah, I'd like to circle back to that. But Richard, looking at 25 years at CNN, you came across many tips from whistleblowers. How did you determine whether a source or a leak was credible?
Well, you go through a sort of mental checklist, if you like. You want to know, do you have a relationship with this source before the person who is coming forward? Is this somebody who has given us material before and it worked out? You look as to whether the source has got documentation with his or her information to show that what she or he is saying is accurate and complete. Do you have the whole thing? How does the person know what they know? You know, what's the proximity of the person to the information? Do they get briefed on it? Do they write the report? Did they just simply read a report, or did they hear about it as gossip at the water cooler? So you do a bunch of evaluation like that, and then you're looking at the individual, particularly in a whistleblower. You know, is that source stable and in control? And a lot of whistleblowers have to be a little bit crazy to throw their employer under the bus and potentially give up their whole livelihood in order to come forward. And then lastly, you know, is the motivation rational, right? Why are they telling you this? Is the motivation to get their boss's job? or undermine the organization, or is it because there's some higher purpose?
What about that, Jeremy? At first, Reality Winner pleaded not guilty. She was denied bail, has spent the last year in jail. You've met her family. What do you think was her motivation for this?
We've never heard from her directly about this. So all we can rely on is what we hear from the family and supporters. And they portray her as a patriot who was trying to show to the American public what was going on with our election system. This story deals with the sanctity of our election system, national security, and the legitimacy of the presidency. And again, at this time, there was a lot of discussion publicly about did the Russians do it, did they not do it? President Trump at the time was denying it all along. And of course, we saw in February when Robert Mueller indicted 13 Russians and spelled out what they were doing, that indeed there was something to this, at least alleged by our federal government, the National Security Intelligence Committee, all had agreed by consensus. But all her supporters said, you know, this was her trying to serve the public interest.
She said, I wasn't trying to be a Snowden or anything. I believe that's what she told the FBI. But do we get a sense there are some clues as to a political motivation or some accusations that this was politically motivated? What substantiates that?
Indeed. You know, so there's the other side of this is her critics that point out that she was extraordinarily critical of President Trump on social media. Talked about wanting to burn the White House down was what she had written in some of the documents that the feds had seized from her home. She talked about fleeing overseas after doing this. They really portrayed her, the federal government, in the court case as a real danger to national security. But at the same time, too, this term whistleblower we keep using, a lot of critics don't believe she is a whistleblower. And some people see it narrowly as someone who is leaking information to go after fraud, waste, and abuse. That's not what this was about. This was about, you know, election security system. And then her critics also point out, look, you know, by leaking this document and the way you went about it and how this case unfolded and you ultimately pleaded guilty, that you've put other whistleblowers in danger who may have actually more significant sensitive information.
That's Jeremy Redman from the Atlanta Journal-Constitutional reporter. He's been reporting on the Reality Winner case. And Richard Griffiths is also with us, president of Georgia's First Amendment Foundation. What's your thought on that? I mean, what is the definition of a whistleblower?
Well, to me, a whistleblower is someone who is providing information to expose deception or wrongdoing on the part of one's employer, or information that is definitely in the public's interest. If you go back to Daniel Ellsberg in the Pentagon Papers case, it was the entire expansion of the Vietnam War into the rest of Indochina, into Laos and Cambodia. And at that time, when that all went to trial and the Supreme Court ruled that the New York Times could publish those Pentagon Papers, Justice Black said, only a free and unrestrained press can effectively expose deception in government, and paramount among the responsibilities of a free press is to prevent any part of the government from deceiving the people. So there's always been a great tradition of whistleblowers providing a valuable role to society. And, you know, you can go back.
And the Pentagon Papers were saying that or showing that the administration had one line for itself, was talking internally and speaking a different way to the public. That's a question, however. It is still espionage as far as the government is concerned. I mean, can you make a case that I was doing it for the right reasons, or are you still going to get prosecuted for leaking?
Well, I think that this is the shift that has taken place, you know, with Ellsberg and so forth, that now the government is taking a very dim view of even the smallest leak, no matter how it informs the public or it gives the public information that is valuable and useful. Part of that is the volume of the WikiLeaks dump. I suspect that that's a big part of it.
Well, that was an absolute game changer. We wouldn't know about the National Security Agency spying on American citizen or leaks from other countries without Edward Snowden and those leaks.
Or Chelsea Manning.
Or Chelsea Manning, for that matter. So what does that mean in the case, Jeremy, of Reality Winner?
Well, you mentioned the Espionage Act, and this is what is really a big part of this case, is she was looking at, you know, 10 years in prison, $250,000 in fines. with this World War I era law that is aimed at spies. And the difficulty she was facing is that that law is a strict liability law. In other words, there's no public interest defense that you can mount with it, that I was doing it in the serve of the public interest, I was trying to do it for good reasons. Nor is it a defense whether your information you leaked damaged national security. It's whether you leaked the document or not. So she was up against extraordinarily difficult odds in the case.
Well, the Snowden and Chelsea Manning case also exposed in public opinion that some people thought, well, it's okay. I don't mind if the government is spying on me as long as our security is protected. Is that shift also going on in the public, as well as the shift of accepting this information as necessary?
Well, I'm going to push back a little bit on that and say, you know, with stories like the Veterans Administration, the whole mess with the VA secretary being forced to resign because he couldn't run his own agency, and hospital after hospital after hospital have multiple lists where they were telling the Congress one thing about patient wait times versus the number of people who had actually died waiting. And that information would only have come out as a result of the whistleblowers who spoke to CNN and other news organizations. So very often the whistleblowers, even today in other parts of government, are absolutely vital, even though that's not a national security issue.
What kind of protections are in place for whistleblowers now?
Well, the best one is for a news organization to do its job and not blow their cover. Mm. And I think that that's the biggest area. And a lot of whistleblower protections have been chipped away at by the courts over the years.
How is this sitting with reality winner? She's been exposed. She's been serving time in jail. Any regrets?
Well, we heard her read a statement at her guilty plea last month where she accepted responsibility. She appeared calm. She was direct. She spoke in an even tone when she spoke. She basically said, I did this of my own will. I have to say, you know, it was remarkable to see her come out and make that statement after spending a year in jail. I think you can't overstate the impact of spending a year in jail had on her decision to plead guilty. She was suffering from depression, an eating disorder. She had been attacked by a fellow inmate in the Lincoln County Jail, where she's been held without bond, and she had injured her knee. So all of that, you know, facing the Espionage Act and losing at almost every turn in court, I think all played a role in her decision finally to plead guilty.
And this is the first prosecution in the Trump administration. What does it signal for going forward?
Well, you know, the people that we've interviewed, among them whistleblowers, have said really they were making an example out of her in this case. She got 5 years as part of this plea deal. She'll be formally sentenced, by the way, soon. But that's, you know, she was looking at 10. The plea deal calls for 5. She's already served a year in jail. It's pretty strong sentence for that.
Yeah, case to watch. Jeremy Redman, reporter for the AJC, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And Richard Griffiths, thank you so much. He's president of the Georgia First Amendment Foundation and a long veteran of CNN. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, just ahead, how did white flight to the suburbs contribute to blight in Atlanta? But first, we're going to get past the stigma of mental illness among communities of color. Get a report on that. It is on Second Thought.